Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. The Navajo community of Tehachapi faces a severe shortage of drinkable water and has long sought a way to pipe in clean water from Albuquerque. They've been able to work out a solution with the Albuquerque Bernalillo County Water Utility Authority, but a land development company stands in the way. This morning, we'll discuss the Tehachapi water crisis, plus the after effects of the 2015 Gold King mine spill and this year's dramatic increase in water use in Albuquerque. And we want to hear from you. Have you been hit hard by the drought that is affecting our state? Is your community taking steps to conserve water? What should policymakers be doing to ensure access to clean water for everyone? To join in the conversation, you can tag us on Twitter with hashtag Let's Talk NM, email letstalk@kunm.org, or call us at 277-5866. Now, I'd like to welcome my first guest this morning, Tehachapi Chapter President Mark Begay. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, sir.
Thank you for joining us. So tell me about the water in Tehachapi. Why is it so difficult to keep it pumping from the ground? What does it look like and smell like when it comes out?
Well, the water we have here, we get our water from the River Pirco Aquifer. And that aquifer is the water coming out of that aquifer is bad, and it has a lot of secondary contaminants, including iron sulfate, hydrogen sulfite. And that hydrogen sulfite, it's a rotten egg smell, and it's a national organic matter that's underground. So we pull a lot of those out, and especially that iron sulfate, it corrodes our pipes within 18 months. So that's what we're dealing with out here, and very corrosive, and it degrades the metallic components of our well.
And I've seen pictures of the water, and it's like a very brownish, kind of muddy-looking consistency. Is that right?
Yes, that's what we're dealing with out here. And the only viable solution to this, it's not drilling a new well. We're still going to have the same problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the depletion of the well, the water that we're pulling up is not viable to our community. The solution to this problem is getting Albuquerque water piped in. That's the only solution we have to our problem.
Now, I mean, could the water be treated in any way to make it drinkable so it doesn't have that rotten egg smell?
It can be treated, but like I said, that the aquifer is depleting. And the water level dropped so much that the only capacity we have is used to be pumping 170, mm-hmm. but now it's gone down so bad that 150 gallons, and the water level has dropped so much that it's not going to be able. Every day we grow, the population in Tehachapi is growing. We have a school. 300, over 300 students that go to this school over here in our community, and they rely on this water, and also our clinic, which with this pandemic going on, we need to have that clinic operational, and we can't have it closed down because we're getting people tested there, and we have our administration building, we have a senior citizen center. And we're also planning a lot of infrastructure, a new school, our clinic expansion. So with that, we can't even grow. And we have a lot of other service providers, behavioral health, diabetes program, and CHR, whatnot.
So right now, with the water being pretty, like, completely undrinkable and also corrosive, how are people in Tehachapi getting water?
We are working with the city of Albuquerque. They were able to provide us with tankers, a 2,000 gallon tanker, and also we're reaching out to our neighbors and through the news media, and a lot of people have responded, and there's so many people that to name, and we have reached out to the governor, and they have provided us whenever we have this outage to the governor's office, and their staff has been very nice to donate some water. Even I was surprised I got a call the other day from the mayor of Mountain Air. And he donated some water, and we had donation coming in from our representative Harry Garcia, and also Senator Shindo, also a lot of these other businesses that are reaching out to us in getting bottled water out here. So, this water, we just use it for like daily, just washing, showering, and washing dishes. People are not able to really drink the water. Mm-hmm.
So the communities nearby are pitching in, but what you need is a long-term solution. So let's talk about this pipeline from Albuquerque. What is stopping you from using water that you have rights to? This is water that's being held in a holding tank. It's only 7 miles away from the village. You have water rights to it. What is stopping you from piping that into the community?
Yeah, we have rights to it. It's Navajo water, Tojile water. We're just using Albuquerque pipes to bring that water into Tojile. It's part of that San Juan water project. But let me kind of just give you a little history of Barclay Bank Capital Real Estate in New York City is the owner of this
of the land that the pipeline would have to pass through?
Yeah, Western Albuquerque Land Holding, LLC. They own that corporation. Under that, there's an asset manager representing Garrett Development Corporation. So we've been trying hard to get something going as far as trying to discuss. We got three landowners that are involved in this property. Two of the property owners are willing to sit down and talk to us, but the last 2 miles of that easement, which is owned by Wall,
that's the Western Albuquerque.
They are not willing to respond to our request to letters and whatnot. Just trying to get them to talk to us and sit down with us and discuss this serious issue we have out here in Tojile.
So there's three landholders who own the land that the pipeline would have to pass through. Two of them are saying it's fine to have the pipeline pass through, and then Western Albuquerque Land Holdings is refusing. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
The total length is 7.3 miles, and the 2 miles is Wall's property, and we respect the landowner's property, and we don't want to get anything for free. We're willing to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
We're willing to give them what's offering compensation for the fair market value of the easement, and plus the allocated cost share for the water-related infrastructure expense incurred by Wall. You know, that's what we want to discuss and talk with them. But to now, we haven't had any real sit down discussion yet. But I'm hopeful every day that we will come to an agreement or come to sit down at the table and discuss this issue like human beings. And we got to respect each other and live peacefully together. We have coexisted for more than 400 years. We have lived together for so long, we should be able to communicate and understand each other's viewpoint. We have to deepen our support and understanding of each other and to live side by side as good neighbors. That's my thinking, from our side.
And I want to point out, we did invite Western Albuquerque Land Holdings to join us on today's show, but they did not respond. So I'd like to bring into the conversation now Debbie O'Malley, who is a commissioner for Bernalillo County. Good morning, Debbie.
Good morning, Ty. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you fine. Now, you represent Tohatchili on the county commission. Why do you think that Western Albuquerque Land Holdings is refusing to allow the pipeline to traverse the 2 miles across their property? This seems like a small concession that would make a huge impact on people's standards of living. How does denying people access to water benefit their corporation?
Well, it's for that reason that we decided to really highlight this issue and why the county has stepped in a couple of months ago after meeting with the people in Tahajali, including the president and the engineers, the water authority. We decided the best thing to do was to proceed with condemnation for eminent domain. We have letters and documents that show that Tahajali or the representatives reached out to Wall. This has been 2 years ago, mm-hmm. beginning 2 years ago. And that's when the tank was built, almost 2 years ago. So that provided this opportunity that we're talking about now mm-hmm. to build a transmission line out there. So, it's been one of those things where the county, of course, and the state have a lot of dealings with developers. In this case, this is the landowner and its asset manager. And we would think that, yes, they would have come to the table some time ago, given that this is a crisis. But mm-hmm. they have not yet done that. My understanding is that there is a meeting that's scheduled. It might be this week or so.
Okay.
A lot of people to come to the table finally. But what needs to happen is, I think everybody understands the problem. You need to get to where, you know, there needs to be something like an agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And that could happen very quickly. Or it could be delayed, depending on what Wall wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Ball's in their court right now. They can do the right thing, as far as I'm concerned, and move quickly to grant them the easement, or there could be this sort of delay and, you know, well, we want this, which I hope isn't the case. I hope that it's just going to be straightforward, and this is pretty straightforward. This is an engineering solution mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense, as was pointed out by President Begay. There's no opportunity to drill another. I mean, drilling another well, it's not going to create a sustainable...
Right. And I do want to point out, this is a Western Albuquerque Land Holdings. They're the developers behind the Santolina Housing Project, which is a proposed 13,700-acre housing addition to the west of Albuquerque. They provided the land for the Amazon expansion. And from what I understand, they've worked with the county on these projects to get improvements and that sort of thing to the land. Is that correct?
That is correct. As the underlying agency, this is our jurisdiction in terms of as you mentioned, for planning approvals, for building permits, all these things have to go through the for all these requests need to go mm-hmm. to the county, and the county commission makes these kinds of decisions. So we have this relationship with, and not just them, but of course they have thousands and thousands of acres that they want to entitle. And so one of the biggest entitlements is water. So with Santolina, for example, they wanted to be able to get water through our system. The water authority said, you're going to have to create your own system. It's a town. Mm-hmm. Essentially, you're creating a town. We don't have the capacity to take on a town. So they were, the idea was that if you're going to do that, you're going to have to create your own system. Well, they actually have, they don't have water for Santolina at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't look like they're looking forward to create any kind of system. But this tank that was built out there is only for the north side
mm-hmm.
of the freeway, I-40, and it's for projects that have already been planned that are east of it.
Mm-hmm.
So this would just be a transmission line to Tahajali directly to Tahajali tank,
mm-hmm.
and it is not a trunk line.
Okay. Now, you are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. This morning, we are talking about water. Do you have concerns about the safety of the groundwater in your area? What do you think should be done about it? Give us a call at 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. We're going to take a quick break.
The Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm is committed to supporting KUNM, where the law firm's criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions. RothsteinLaw.com.
UNM Health, delivering more to families through medical research and advanced treatments for high-risk pregnancies, orthopedics, and cancer. UNM Health is proud to support KUNM and proud to serve before, during, and as New Mexico gets through this pandemic.
The young Beethoven borrowed a song that everybody was singing in Vienna, a tune from a popular opera. Beethoven made it very much his own by writing 9 playful variations. A Beethoven trio from an all-star concert on the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. This morning we're talking about access to clean water. What threats to water access does your community face? Give us a call at 277-5866 and let us know. Debbie, sorry to have to cut you off a second ago. Those breaks come and we gotta jump on them. But I want to go back to talking about the Western Albuquerque Land Holdings Company and their other projects. Is it possible that they are using this easement as a sort of a bargaining chip in order to maybe get water access for their proposed community of Santa Elena?
Well, it's not out of the realm of possibilities, that's for sure. I can't say with any certainty, though.
Mm-hmm. And you said that if an agreement can't be made, and you said there's maybe a meeting coming up soon, but you said if an agreement can't be made, that the county has a plan to potentially condemn the land. Can you tell me what that process would mean?
Right. So essentially, it's a lawsuit, and that could take some months. One of our timeline is we want to get something going, an agreement before the end of the year, because the Navajo Nation just committed $2 million to this project through the CARES Act, and it has to be spent by the end of the year.
Right.
So that's going to be very important that we have some agreement before then. As mentioned, time just keeps ticking along. These folks could have had water already.
Mm-hmm.
It's been 2 years. So whatever we can do to advance this project is going to be very, very important. But it's got to be a fair, mm-hmm. mutually acceptable agreement. And that's there yet.
Okay, and Mark, I want to go back to you and say, so we've got this ticking timeline with the CARES Act, and of course that is money from the federal government in order to help with COVID-related problems. Can you tell me about how COVID-19 and the pandemic has made this issue even more dire than it normally would be?
Yes, again, thank you. First, I want to just kind of make it clear that a lot of misinformation is out there. In 2006, the Albuquerque Water Utility Authority, we signed an cooperative agreement with the utility board.
Mm-hmm.
We stated in there... there's a lot of information saying that we're running this line to build a big casino. That is not true. It says in here that the project shall serve a single-purpose project serving the municipal demands of the Torrijos chapter at a Navajo Nation point of service that will not serve other water users without the mutual consent of the parties and consistent with the terms of this agreement. And that agreement was signed by 3 parties, the Water Utility Authority, the Navajo Nation, and the Torrijos chapter representative.
So this is not to build some sort of large development like a casino or something out there.
No, this is just to serve our community with clean and reliable water that will take us into the 21st future, mm-hmm. and our young kids won't have to worry about water. And our community's priority, top of the list, is water. Has been there for so long. with this water being piped in from Albuquerque, we will be able to erase that number one priority. And the number two will then go, then we'll start working on that number as number one.
Mm-hmm.
How it has affected us is we have at least from the latest is 48 positive, and two have passed on our community. So it's really affected us here in July. And with this, I don't want my people going out there to Walmart, to congregating, trying to get water. We're trying to, if this water was here now, people would just be staying home. And we will be able to get food to them. That's easier than, because they have to wash their hands, they have to shower, and they have to do all that. But and then when trucks get trucked in, people congregate there. We don't want them congregating at a watering point. So it really has affected Kojile as a community. With this pandemic, we don't even know how long this is going to be here with us. So every day we don't know. Every tomorrow we don't know. I'm looking ahead like it's going to be here next year. That's how I look at it. I mean, I don't like to say that, but that's the reality of it.
We have a call from Eric in Albuquerque. Good morning, Al. Eric, what is your question today?
Yeah, hi, good morning. I guess I had a question. Maybe Commissioner O'Malley can answer this. My understanding is that the developer in this case has received some pretty significant tax breaks, tax increment finance financing for their development out there. And I'm just wondering why they wouldn't be held accountable to do the right thing for the community out there. And you know, I know they're spending a lot of money on campaigns. They spent some money on attack ads against Mayor Keller, and they elect some of the folks on the commission. Just wondering, is there a way to hold them accountable to, instead of spending all the money for the taxpayers on a campaign ad, maybe to do the right thing for the Navajo people?
Commissioner O'Malley?
Yes. And this is why it was very important, I think, to get to get the public to understand this crisis, to get them aware, become aware of it, so that they can call their electeds and let them know how important this is. And Eric is right that when you have these big corporations, they give a lot of money out. They write big checks. They have a lot of influence, not only in governments. So it's upon us to say, look, and bring some transparency to this. And in terms of Western Albuquerque land holdings, yes, they have received a lot of subsidies from the government. Most recently, as you mentioned, Amazon, Bernalillo County put in what, $6 million for infrastructure out there. Of course, it's public infrastructure, but it benefits the landowner. They were able to sell a big chunk of land to Amazon. So, and then we improved properties for development. Now, of course, there is a return for us as well. That means jobs for us. So, you know, we have to weigh all those things in terms of return on investment. So to me, this would, I think, is you know, someone mentioned that it was a no-brainer, right, for the corporation to do something that is right. So it's one of those things where it's just a mystery. So in terms of holding them accountable, I think the public to put pressure against the electeds, and also to reach out and Wall is a limited liability corporation. So it's my understanding that Barclays Bank is one of the partners, and as was mentioned, Garrett Development Corporation has a lot of clients. So we've got to hold these folks up and make sure that they are accountable. This is an important. This is beyond important. This is a crisis for this community.
Okay, and Mark, I want to thank you for sharing the hardships that your community has faced. I want to ask you, during this water crisis and pandemic, what's bringing you hope for change?
I just pray every day and that we get this water situation taken care of. because it's going to affect our kids that's going to be born now, today, mm-hmm. tomorrow. And I've been through a lot of stressful once this pandemic came up for my people, you know. Mm-hmm. That's who I'm working for is my people, my community, and our veterans too. I'm a Marine Corps veteran, served my country well. And I'd like to mention that we, fortunately, has a lot of talented people in our community. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of silversmiths. And if I may, I'd like to bring up Mayor Tim Keller is a good neighbor and friend of ours. And he's early 18 to 2018, he signed an ordinance that to require the city to consult with tribes on any matter that might affect them, and mm-hmm. that's including health. And he expanded the Commission on American Indian and Alaska Native Affairs from 5 to 9 mm-hmm. members. And our representative from here is my vice president, Honorable Jacqueline Patero. And he's been real helpful, too, in this struggle with the pandemic and the water line. And this measure recognizes tribal sovereignty, especially among tribes and pueblos near the city. Mm-hmm. Those tribal governments include the pueblo of Sandia, Isleta, Santa Ana, and Laguna, and Coahuila chapter. So that's what, as a humanitarian effort, like the caller just called in, Well, this come to the table, and I'd just like to mention tomorrow is Navajo Nation Code Talker Day. Mm-hmm. We had a code talker who passed away in the 90s. His name was Richard Patero. And also, our community is well known for a lot of movies being shot here. I think everybody knows Walter White.
Right.
Bryan Cranston, he won numerous awards, mm-hmm. and he's the one that starred in Breaking Bad, and he's the one that buried that barrel full of money, oh. and we still have that money here.
Well, there you go. Here's the money. Well, Mark, I want to thank you so much for coming on this show and telling us about this situation, and I hope things work out well for you. Thank you, Commissioner O'Malley, for joining us as well. We are going to go ahead and shift gears now. We're going to talk a little bit about the northeastern part of the state, where the Navajo Nation has been dealing with the after effects of the 2015 Gold King mine spill. That was when the Environmental Protection Agency personnel accidentally released 3 million gallons of toxic waste into the Animas River, which is a tributary of the San Juan River. And to discuss this situation, I'd like to welcome water researcher Brandon Francis of New Mexico State University. Good morning, Brandon. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, yeah, Benin. How are you?
Well, we're doing okay here. How are you this morning?
I'm doing well.
So you've been working over the last several years to study the effects of the Gold King spill on soil, water, and plants on the Navajo Nation. Can you tell me what kind of impact did this spill have on plant life and agriculture in the immediate aftermath of the disaster?
As you probably know, in August 5th of 2015, 3.5 to 4 million gallons of heavy metal-laden water was, like you mentioned, was actually accidentally spilled into the Animas River, which feeds into the San Juan, and people growing along the river shut down their irrigation ditches for 2 weeks during a critical growing point for their crops. And some communities, like Shiprock, chose not to reopen the irrigation ditches and take the loss, and it was very, very devastating on them because the Navajo people consider the crops and the corn as their relatives. So when they saw their corn and all their vegetables and produce dying, it had a really deep impact on them.
Mm-hmm. And it's an impact that continues today. We're 5 years out now, as we said. You've been monitoring the soil since that time. How are things looking today?
The things that we've New Mexico State University at the Agricultural Science Center in Farmington has had a long-term monitoring project for the past 5 years. And as you mentioned, we monitor the irrigation ditch water for various canals, mm-hmm. systems here and here along the San Juan River and Animas. And we monitor the field soil and as well as the plants, the root, the leaf, and the fruit that it produces. And mm-hmm. so things have been monitoring to reassure the consumers and the producers that things are okay and they can grow their crops.
So things are okay now? The soil is not showing signs of contamination in that area?
Yeah, and the hard part is telling them that and informing them that this event was a wake-up call and that this process has been going on for millions of years and only recently has been exacerbated by the mining done in the La Plata Mountains in the mm-hmm. late 19th century and early 20th century. And that cleanup processes are ongoing, mm-hmm. but the danger is still there, and that's what concerns people the most.
Now, can you tell me what you mean when you say the process has been going on for millions of years?
The La Plata Mountains, in particular, where the Animas River originates, is an ancient caldera that collapsed in on itself. And when it collapsed in on itself, all these precious metals, including heavy metals like silver, arsenic, lead, copper, they were really close to the surface. So every time during the spring runoff and the monsoon season, it naturally leaches these metals out of the mountain and they come out and come down the river. And so it's a natural geomorphological process. And like I mentioned, it's only been exacerbated by the mining that was going on up mm-hmm. there in the 18th century.
Now, how many mines are we talking about in the La Plata Mountains?
Just on that arm, I believe there's over 300, which are in similar condition to mm-hmm. the Gold King mine.
Now, what is it about the mines that make it so much potentially worse or exacerbate that natural kind of leaching process that you were talking about?
All the mines, they've been remediated to a point where the water that collected coming out of these mines collects in what's called tailings ponds or slime mm-hmm. ponds. And every day, per federal regulation, they're allowed to release some of this every minute, like a couple hundred gallons into the river. Mm-hmm. So about every day, about naturally 3 million gallons of heavy metal laden water comes into the river.
Mm-hmm. So this is an ongoing issue, even though...
Yeah, it's an ongoing issue. And when the river turned orange or dark or very orange and yellow, as Matt was called, it turned yellow, litso, and it was just that tipping point in the mm-hmm. in the equilibrium that was established. But back in the early 1800s, when they were mining, there were complaints from the farmers in Durango that the water that was coming down was so contaminated. And this was in the early 1900s, and it was mentioned in the Durango Herald that the mining activity was making it impossible for agriculture.
So this is not something that started or stopped with the Gold King mine disaster. And the cleanup that has occurred there, while it's been effective, I mean, this is still an issue that's going to be ongoing in the future, right, from all these other mines?
Yeah, the cleanup cost, it probably runs in the billions of 4,300 mm-hmm. mines. So it's a problem, and it worries people. This can happen again, and people are afraid that will the same thing happen? Will the event be similar or worse? Because the 3.5 million gallons that spilled in 2015 was minute compared to spills in the past. Like when mm-hmm. Lake Emma collapsed, that was 100 million gallons that released into the river, I believe, in 1979, and it turned the river a silver color, mm-hmm. and what, and no one knew about that. And we live in an era of social media, mm-hmm. and we have a media device in our pocket, cell phone, and everybody knew about it. So
Okay, well, we are going to have to take a quick break here. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We'll be back in a moment.
If KUNM strikes a special chord with you, donate that old accord to keep the tunes coming. Turn your Beatle into the Beatles. Turn your Altima into the ultimate in great music. Have a Buick Century from the last century. Donate it to us in this century. We accept just about anything with wheels and an engine. To find out if your car qualifies, call 888-KUNM-CAR. It just takes a few minutes. That's 888-KUNM-CAR or 888-586-6227.
The Trump administration says the federal government will not remove four dams on the Snake River in Washington. It's a blow to tribes working to restore salmon runs. Another fight over dams in California is at a standstill. We'll get an update on ongoing efforts to restore habitat in the Pacific Northwest. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are discussing water issues that are affecting New Mexicans, and we are taking your calls. You can join the conversation by calling 277-5866. I was just speaking to Brandon Francis about the after effects of the Gold King mine spill, and even though his studies have shown that the area's agriculture is safe, as he mentioned, many residents of the Navajo Nation are still concerned about potential contaminants in locally grown food. Joining me to talk about these concerns is Trini King, who is the manager of the Shiprock Farmers Market. Good morning, Trini.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing well today. So thank you for joining me. So you took over the Shiprock Farmers Market soon after the Gold King disaster. Could you tell me what it was like for farmers in the Navajo Nation in the aftermath of that spill?
First and foremost, whenever you come into Shiprock, you know, everybody's always excited about the corn. They're excited about the harvest. They're very excited about the produce. And, you know, that year it was just heartbreaking because we use these sacred medicines that we grow from the earth in order to, you know, in order to do ceremonies, in order to, you know, bring food to the table, in order to eat, in order to, you know, to build that economic growth within our own pockets. The Navajo Reservation is really, it's a really tough place to live, mm-hmm. and especially during that time, during the Gold King mine spill. So when the Gold King mine spill happened, nobody, you know, just like Brandon said, Shiprock decided to shut off the irrigation mm-hmm. just because, you know, everybody came together. And because we are so close to the land, because we are one with the land, one with this earth, you know, a lot of us were like, you know, this is not good. We can't eat this. We don't even know what's going on. I mean, they didn't let anybody know about the Gold King mine spill until, 24 hours later. Mm-hmm. And things could have happened to help, you know, get people situated, like livestock. We could have shut off our irrigation system a little bit earlier. But, you know, it didn't happen like that. So, again, as Navajo people, we felt, you know, we felt hurt. I mm-hmm. mean, we live around, you know, power plants that were around here for so long. We have asthma issues. We have uranium issues. You know, we're fighting for water just to make sure that we have water going to our land. So this Gold King mine spill, it was mm-hmm. just horrible. It was frustrating. You know, nobody wanted to sell. You know, just because we're facing the discouragement of people asking, well, this is not good. This is contaminated. This is dirty. And as a farmer, as a grower, as someone who put a seed into this earth, a person who does that, who creates their own food system source, they understand the hard work, the labor that goes all into it, and especially love mm-hmm. into making sure that your crops grow. So in doing this, you know, I knew that I had to get back to my hometown mm-hmm. and I knew that, you know, I needed to do something with my degree. I needed to do something with my energy. I needed to do something. And I didn't need a title. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to be I didn't need to be a doctor. I didn't need to be a scientist. I didn't need to be a political leader. I didn't need to be any of that in order to do what I did, which was to rejuvenate the Shiprock Farmers Market. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I learned as a young person, just learning how to deal with the public, mm-hmm. Collaborating with people like Brandon Francis, mm-hmm. Or the team in New Mexico State University, the Navajo Nation EPA, getting as much information as possible to inform our community mm-hmm. that, you know what, it's okay to farm. And just by the farmers market coming back, and back in 2018 we came back and we said, yes, we got trampled by the Gold King mine spill. Mm-hmm. Yes, the plume came down, but you know what? We are resilient. Mm-hmm. And as Navajo people, as Indigenous people, we are still standing here and we are planting. Mm-hmm. So what we did with the farmers market was we joined forces with people who care. That's the key word. People mm-hmm. who care. You don't have to care about what's going on out there in the world, but what's happening just right here, right outside your front door. And that's the message that we were sending young people. Mm-hmm. Young people, you know what? You may not be able to farm. You may not have land. You may not know nothing about farming or anything about a farming equipment, but if you care about the food that's being put onto your table, if you care about that water that's out there, that's gold right now, if you care that it's affecting our community and our elders, then get your butt up, put your phone down, put your video games down, and just donate at least 2 hours of your time mm-hmm. at the Shiprock Farmers Market. So and you know what? It's amazing. A group of young people came together, mm-hmm. Young people like Kyle Jim, Brianna Lehman, elders as well, LaVonna George. You know, these mm-hmm. people from everywhere came around and they joined forces and we got this farmers market together. We did not have a budget.
Right.
We did not have a budget. We just had my savings account. And I said, you know what, let's pop up some canopies and let's talk to the original owner of the Shiprock Farmers Market, which okay. is Yvonne Totachini.
Well, I want to ask you a little bit about how the farmers market is faring in the age of COVID-19. I mean, I would think that since the Navajo Nation was particularly hard hit by COVID, that bringing people together in the farmers market might be an issue. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, anytime there's any type of pandemic or crisis happening on the Navajo Nation, you know, the nation takes it a step higher to make sure that, you know, we don't spread it. So mm-hmm. that explains the whole lockdown, the curfews that were happening. The curfews that were happening within the Navajo Nation. So during this COVID pandemic, you know, that was a huge question. What are we going to do at the mm-hmm. farmers market here in Shiprock? What do we do? How is it even going to happen this year? I wasn't even too sure if it was going to happen. So as time went by, and as the COVID statistics started slowly dropping on the Navajo Reservation. I believe last Saturday was the first Saturday that they took the weekend lockdown off. Mm-hmm. So, but we still have lockdown on Sunday. So as you can see, it's slowly, slowly reopening the Navajo Nation. Mm-hmm. In doing that, I went to my mentors and the New Mexico State Health Department mentors, along with the New Mexico Farmers Market Association, and not knowing that the New Mexico Farmers Market Association was already considered an essential mm-hmm. As an essential market. So in doing that, we got the approval from the New Mexico State governor to go ahead and open the market, complying with the COVID-19 CDC restrictions. So, you know, we have to have a whole new mm-hmm. protocol. But we've been working closely with all the farmers markets in the area, the Farmington Farmers Market, Farmington Growers Market. Bonnie Hopkins actually started the market early this year compared to Shiprock. So I was able to, you know, help her out, and we trained, and we had to get hand washing stations. Mm-hmm. We had to make sure that, you know, we had the right amount of we didn't have too many people within the coned area of the market, mm-hmm. the growers market. So there's some challenges.
Mm-hmm, sure.
There's some challenges every year, but this year it just seems like a little insane with the COVID-19.
Is there an advantage to having locally grown produce during a time of pandemic like this?
You know what? I was actually told from some of the physicians from Indian Health Services that the farmers market is actually considered a lot more safe to buy produce from rather than a grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why I'm saying is because, you know, you have to keep six feet away mm-hmm. from the farmer and their vending table.
Right.
And so in order to, you know, at a grocery store, everybody's picking up cucumbers, looking at it, you know, seeing if they're going to purchase it or not. But at the farmer's market, they cannot do that.
Mm-hmm.
They have to point and tell the farmer which one that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And the farmer goes ahead and, you know, selects it and puts it in. But if the consumer really wants to feel it, you know, we'll hand them gloves
mm-hmm.
so that they can, you know, feel for it.
So it's a much more kind of overseen process, it sounds like. I have a call from Lori in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lori. What is your comment or question?
Good morning. So we're taught that water is life, and the quality, the quantity, and access to water is just critically important to our communities, and yet it's being, you know, withheld or damaged. And that really impacts all of our generations yet to come.
Mm-hmm.
And so my question is, you know, where is the federal delegation on all these issues?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm especially interested in the access issue because that
right.
seems so solvable. And, you know, I know we now have our Native American congresswoman, and I just want to know, like, are they pressuring the appropriate entities to do better? And,
right.
you know, I just think that these are important issues, and you know, when water is being withheld, it's very painful. And
absolutely.
You know, I was up in Shiprock right before COVID, and you know, there were still signs around the chapter houses that mm-hmm. were just, you know, beware of the water, and it just seemed like a cover your behind type mm-hmm. of strategy. And so I'm just wondering, where is the federal delegation?
It's a good question, and you know, thank you, Lori, for that. Unfortunately, we don't have anybody from the federal delegation to talk about that today. I do want to thank Trini and Brandon for joining us today to talk about the situation in Shiprock. We are going to move on to our final guest, that is Carlos Bustos. He monitors Albuquerque and Bernalillo County's water usage and is the Water Conservation Program Manager for the Albuquerque-Bernalillo County Water Authority. Good morning, Carlos.
Hey, good morning, Ty. Hey, thank you.
Certainly. So the authority recently reported that the city of Albuquerque's water usage is up by 1 billion gallons compared to last year's usage. What is going on?
Thank you, Ty. After having a great year in 2019, the community saved almost 1 billion gallons. So, yes, this year, when we look at current usage, it's about 1.2 billion gallons
mm-hmm.
More than last year at this time. So this year, of course, is a different story. Last year, we were celebrating conservation efforts, and, mm-hmm. and this year, we're kind of like just observing it. The year started out dry. By February, outdoor usage mm-hmm. was already about 200 million gallons higher than in 2019. Summer brought 5 record temperature days,
mm-hmm.
and July was the second driest in 10 years. And obviously, with the pandemic issue, schools having to close and mm-hmm. people starting to work remotely, we saw an early shift on usage with savings on the commercial side.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, demand from our houses started to rise.
So the demand from the houses rose because people are staying at home and maybe watering their lawns or gardening more. But it's not balanced out by closures at offices and public facilities like schools?
It is balancing out indoors. One of the main effects that we're seeing is that the monsoon season started late.
Mm.
So and nearly started. It started late and then maybe lasted 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
There's still some clouds around, but there's definitely no rain coming our way. So looking at total precipitation, we're about 30% below. rainfall is behind. Last year we had about 6 inches by July. This year maybe we have 4. So, of course, that residential usage is up indoors just because we're spending more time at our houses. You know, so instead of being 5 days, now we're 7 days in our houses. So we want our yards and our space and our landscape to look a lot more better because we're not shifting into other places.
We have to look out our windows and see what we've got out there, right?
Exactly. So we're starting to see the indoor usage balance out, yet outdoor is increasingly going up. One of the things that we're looking at is in 2018, 1.2 billion gallons, is that 1.2 billion gallons is higher, and it's mainly because of outdoor usage.
I see.
And when I look at August and the outlook that's coming our way, it worries me.
So does the Water Authority offer any services to kind of help people and businesses lower their usage during this time?
So we're doing multiple things. Obviously, listening to your show this morning, it conveyed many important reasons to continue to be good stewards of our water resources. You know, our plan, our Water 2120 plan, it's a 100-year plan, and it's developed with input from the community. And one of the main things is conservation. In order for it to be successful, we need to be great stewards and keep conservation in our minds, even in a year like this. So we're doing a few things, taking advantage. We have to, like, be innovative this year because of the COVID and working remotely and just not being able to do, like, face-to-face contact meetings and workshops and education.
So
we're using a few things. We're doing leak reports to help APS and the city and the county with identifying leaks in the field. That's helping out because the schools are closed now, so we've been able to go in there and pinpoint leaks that otherwise we wouldn't been able to do. The other thing we're doing is we're focusing a lot on malfunctions and, and the waterway side and top priority and working with property managers to personalize programs so we can help them improve their water usage overall and reduce bills. And that's through different rebates and incentives that we offer.
Now, we're kind of coming up on the end of the program here. What is a way that people can find out about these services?
So there's two ways. We got a resource website. It's called 505 Outside. And it's a resource for landscape and irrigation practices. But if you got a quick question, you can also email us to askanexpert@abcwua.org.
Thank you so much, Carlos. That is all the time that we have today. I want to thank everyone who called in to share their thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, to Hachalí Chapter President Mark McGay, Commissioner Debbie O'Malley, Brad Francis, Trini King, and Carlos Buntos. The conversation doesn't have to end here. You can share your thoughts on Twitter, #LetsTalkNM, on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Kaveh Movahead screened your calls. Taylor Velasquez live tweeted the show today. Our news director is Hannah Colton, and she produced. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.